You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Pressure on Bridge, and he's dropped back at midfield. And the ball came loose, and it's Ticat football. Simone Lawrence comes up with it. And Hamilton takes it back. Trying to keep this drive alive. Second and six. Over the middle. Caught. Saunders. Jalen Saunders. Touchdown. Mazzoli looking for the end zone, and incomplete, wow. And time is out, and the Rough Riders have held on.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, lots of stuff to get into this week, so let's just jump right into it. Another tough loss for our Ticats. They dropped a close one, 27-19 to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We'll get into the nitty-gritty and all the minutiae in a second, but we have to start kind of at the end. That final play call is really sort of the story of the game. So let me set the scene for anyone out there who's listening that didn't watch the game, although if you didn't watch the Ticats game this week, I'm shocked you're listening to a Ticats podcast, but you never know. They were down 8 with 5 seconds left. They had the ball at the Riders' one-yard line, and with one play left, they decide what to do. Do they pound the rock with Gable or Mazzoli, or do they spread out the D and try to find an open window and throw the ball and get the touchdown that way? And they did the latter, and the pass from Jeremiah Mazzoli to Jalen Saunders felt incomplete, and the game was over. Done. That was it. So, Mike, what do you think? This play call, it was a lot. I talked about it with Ticat fans after the game, and it was consensus seemed to be they should have run the ball. So, what do you think? Do you like the call? Do you hate it? Would you have done something different? Just what are your general thoughts on how this game came to a close?
You know what? Watching the play again, I think he would have been a touchdown if Saunders didn't trip in the end zone. I mean, he almost made the catch even though he fell. So you can look at it that way, or you can look at it another way of they're at the one-yard line. Gable's been running hard for the last couple of games. He had a similar touchdown run from the one-yard line in the last game where he powered in. So if I were making that call, I would either handed it to Gable, not out of shotgun. As soon as I saw that they were in shotgun or pistol or whatever it was, I was not happy. I was like, why aren't they just lining up behind center and, you know, falling forward with Mazzoli or handing off the ball to Gable? If I had the choice between the two, I would have probably went with the QB sneak from Mazzoli. You might have had a chance for two plays if you went that route. So overall, I don't think I like the play call of them passing on the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I would have run it in with Gable personally. You mentioned it; he bowled in for a 1 yard touchdown a couple games ago against the Red Blacks. He didn't get a lot in terms of rushing yardage in this one. He had 7 carries for 26 yards, a 3.7 yard average, a long of 9. He wasn't as good in this game as he was the previous game, but picking up 1 or 2 yards, he could have done. I understand spreading out the defense, and even then, spread out the defense and still run the ball. Again, not out of the pistol shotgun formation. It's funny, after the game, when they lined up like that, as I was leaving the stadium, a friend of mine said, oh my God, when they were in shotgun, I was thinking of Mike just screaming his head off on the show this week, because he obviously listens to the show, and he made me like, Mike always hates that. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. But yeah, I would have run the ball too. But I understand the reasoning for throwing, because you have that large end zone and you have 5 or 6 options as opposed to 1. You mentioned it. If Saunders doesn't slip, he probably catches that one rather easily. The window to throw that ball was massive, and there was a lot of space there. I get where they're coming from. I just personally would have run the ball because you got a bull back there in C.J. Gable. Let him do his job. Pick up the 1 yard. Send this thing to overtime, or at least give us a chance to send to overtime, because obviously they would have had to hit the two-point convert after that. So I don't like the call. I can understand it in a way. I just wish they would have done something differently.
Yeah, I would have liked to see them do a QB sneak and just, you know, if it doesn't work the first time, hopefully have enough time and do it again. But you're right, they still have to make the two-point conversion afterwards, and I always get very nervous when any team has to make a two-point conversion at the end of the game to send it to overtime, because it just, I don't know if this is factual enough, but it just seems that way, that it just doesn't work out most of the time. So even if they would have made that touchdown, there's no guarantee that they would have made the two-point to send it in overtime. But if I were the coach, which I will never be, I probably would have called a run there.
Yeah, same here. I think the biggest or the bigger mistake, if you will say, in this game was when June Jones used his timeout earlier in the game. I can't remember if it was in the first half or the second half, but he called timeout and then they measured and it was short on third down. And it was, I think it was near the end of the first half, and they had to kick a field goal instead of being able to try the third down play and then have maybe another couple shots at the end zone. I think that was a bigger mistake. I think that's, you know, a kind of a rookie CFL head coach mistake, not as familiar with the league as he should be, because you call the timeout there, there wouldn't have been enough time to run the sneak and then run another play. The clock would have expired, or like that was an error. So if he would have not used the timeout there, he could have had the timeout later. He obviously lost one on a challenge, but he would have still had a second timeout. Could have used it on that final drive to save some time and maybe get a couple of shots at the end zone from the 1 yard line, because Brandon Banks draws that pass interference call and sets him up right there. If that's with 15 to 20 seconds left, mm-hmm. you can run multiple plays. Like, you, because the run, again, even though 5 seconds left, you have one play. If you have multiple shots at it, then throwing on first down and then running on second or third, if it gets to that, not so big a deal. It just there were mistakes in this game that it's gonna come. We're gonna talk about, and we have talked about, and fans are gonna talk about the last play. But there were mistakes made throughout the game that got us to this point. Another big one was Jeremiah Mazzoli's interception in the end zone. If that doesn't happen, there's three more points on the board at a minimum, and now this team's down 5 points on that last play. They're scoring a touchdown to win the game. So lots of mistakes happen in this, so I don't just want to focus on the one play. That's pretty much where I'm at with this.
Yeah, there's a ton of – I mean, you turn over the ball 5 times in a game. I mean, we shouldn't have even been close. We shouldn't even have had the chance to tie this game up. There was just – Mazzoli was way too inconsistent. The offense looked putrid in the first half up until that touchdown pass to Jalen Saunders late in the first half. There was – just many, many mistakes in this game that cost us the win, because I mean, you look at the stats and we're leading, I believe, in a lot of them. We had 416 yards on offense, which was a lot more than what Saskatchewan had at 272. We had more possession time, not by much, but we still had more. But the turnovers is what really did this team in.
Yeah, and it wasted an excellent performance by the defense that we'll get to in a moment, because I thought the defense – people are going to look at the score and go, oh, they gave up 27 points. But there were instances, for instance, right at the beginning of the game, Mike Jones has the fumble. They get the ball, Skechnik gets the ball inside the 5-yard line, and the defense holds them to a field goal. That is the defense not giving up three. That's the defense scoring 4, because in that situation, most teams would score a touchdown. That was like this offense, the you said putrid, and you're correct. Their performance cost this great defensive performance a victory.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go say that it was a great defensive performance. I mean, they made Brandon Bridge look pretty darn good, did they not?
They did, but then we look at the second half. 6 straight 2-and-outs to end the game? You can't ask for anything more from your defense.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's well, that's been the story recently, right? I mean, the defense has been stepping up, and the offense isn't – I mean, they had a good game the last 2 games. They had pretty good games. But, yeah, earlier in the season, the offense was probably slightly a brighter spot than the defense, and now it seems to be the defense that's shining.
Absolutely. So let's get into some of the the finer details of this with we'll start with the offense, and we'll start with Bozzoli, and he was just off in this game. It was not his best night since he's been anointed the starter of this team. Goes 28 of 48, an under 60% completion percentage once again. It's the third straight game that he's been under 60%, which is unacceptable is probably not the right word, but you want your quarterback in the low to mid 60s at a minimum, and he's been 58.3 in this game. He has been 56.1 overall. Like, his completion percentage is just not great. But he did have 328 yards, but he only had the one touchdown, and he had the two interceptions, and one of them was a backbreaker. And they made this move to bring him in and bench Caleros, and you look at their numbers, and Zach's completion percentage is higher. Zach's touchdown to interception ratio is better. The only difference is Mazzoli can run the football, and that has added a dimension to the offense. But I'm honestly getting to this point now where I think we're going to have a talk of, should Zach Caleros get back into this starting lineup?
Well, to me, Jeremiah Mazzoli is not a starting quarterback. He's just way too inconsistent from game to game. You never know which Mazzoli is going to show up. He's just not very – I mean, once he started rushing the ball, I thought that's when the offense started to pick up. But passing the ball is just – he can look so good. Like that one drive when he threw the interception in the end zone. I mean, everything was going great, and then all of a sudden he throws a bad ball, and it's a pick, and it's a big pick. And to me, this guy is just, once again, not a starting quarterback just because he's so damn inconsistent.
So speaking of that interception, I want to bring that up because that was a major turning point in this game. The Ticats challenged it for illegal contact, and they were denied. But Steve Milton, who I think is probably one of the five best CFL reporters on the planet, he was on Twitter and said the Ticats probably should have won the challenge. Now, at the game, they did not show the replay on the big board, so I had to come home and watch the replay. And I don't know how you feel, but it looks to me like Milton was right. It's very minimal contact, but Jeff Heck bumps Jalen Saunders, and that looked to be where Mazzoli was going with the ball. He still would have overthrown him by a mile, but it looks to me like the call should have been overturned. What did you see?
Oh, who knows? I mean, the contact was minimal, but the letter of the law, I guess they should have called it, but who knows what they're going to decide these days? I mean, I can't figure it out.
No, it seems like it's a roll of the dice every time, and it's supposed to be, like you said, letter law. He bumped him. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say the refs cost Ticats the game. Again, five turnovers. That was more of a hindrance to a victory than anything that the referees could have done. But, man, oh, man, what a turn that could have made, because who knows what happens there. Sticking offensively, we got to talk about Mike Jones. What has happened to this guy? It seems like 8 weeks ago, beginning of the season or whatever it was, 13 weeks ago, we're fluffing this guy. We're pumping this guy's tires. He looked really good, and then the drops and the fumbles started to happen, and he had a killer fumble in this one, and the Ticats have made a bunch of moves that we'll get to a little bit later to address their Canadian receiver depth. Mike Jones had a chance to cement himself as a starting receiver in this league, and he looked like he was about to do that, and then the wheels just completely came off the truck, and he took a dive over the cliff. I cannot explain it. Can you?
No. The only thing I could say is it's mental. It's got to be. I mean, it's just in his head. He's nervous or something, because every time he touches the ball now, it seems like he's dropping it, either dropping the pass or catching it and then bumbling. So it's too bad, because we were both really high on him at the start of the season, and now it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, he was on pace to put up numbers that would have ranked amongst the elite over the last 5 or 6 years when it comes to a Canadian playing that wide side receiver position, and now it's anything but. And the Ticats are bringing other Canadians in to play receiver, and maybe he just needs a spell on the bench and to play some special teams, maybe to get his confidence back. I don't know, but it really does look like he's got, I believe you mentioned it last week. I don't know if we're talking about him, but I think we're talking about someone else. But you said the yips. And that's exactly what it looks like Mike Jones has right now. He's just, every time he catches the ball, it's an adventure and not a good one.
Now, it's definitely a mental thing. And he has to get past it, because if he wants to have a long career in the CFL, he's going to have to put that behind him and just move on to the next game.
For sure, for sure. I was happy with the Ticats sticking with the running game this week. 16 rushes for them came a week after they had 18 against the Ottawa Redblacks, and 7 of them were from C.J. Gable, 9 of them from Jeremiah Mazzoli. And I know the production wasn't stellar, only 88 yards rushing, but the thing I noticed, and I wonder if you noticed it too, they didn't abandon the run when getting yards was tough or when they were down. They mixed it in either with a quarterback draw or with handing it to Gable, and they kept Gable involved in the game. He had a few bad drops, notably some on some bad throws by Mazzoli, but they kept Gable involved and they kept running the football. And 16 rushes doesn't seem like a lot because it's not, but for the Ticats, that's like rushing 30 times a game. Like, it was nice to see them not just go, okay, we're down by 17 or whatever it was, and just that's it, we're gonna throw every play now. They mixed it in, and I thought that made the offense hum a little bit better in a game that I don't think the offense was anywhere near their best.
Yeah, and you have to do that. You have to mix in the run a lot for Mazzoli. Mazzoli's at his best when he's running and, you know, the dual threat, running and passing, because we saw it early in that first half. Most of the first half, he did not run at all, I believe. And then they started calling runs for him, and the offense started to pick up. So the running game is a huge asset for this team, especially when Mazzoli's at quarterback.
Well, it frees up receivers to make plays and to find holes in coverage. Like, if the threat of a run is there, then the defense, and we've said this before and we'll continue to say it, the defense can't pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. And they're seemingly going to start Mazzoli until I assume he either completely craps the bed, gets hurt, or the season's over. He's a guy that can run too. So if he escapes, it keeps the defense honest. And that's something that was missing when Caleros was at the helm. They were running the ball 5 times a game. And when you do that and you're down, you're going to get your quarterback killed. And that's what happened. So it's nice to see them pepper in the run more than they used to.
Yeah, absolutely. And another guy we have to give props to is Jalen Saunders. What a game from this guy.
Yeah, he was and unfortunately, I think everything's going to go down when they're going to say, oh, he dropped the touchdown at the end. But outside of that, man, he was absolutely fantastic. 10 catches for 138 yards and a touchdown. He's been a little quiet recently. I think we saw Brandon Banks take over for a little bit. We've seen Luke Tasker stay involved in the offense. And I guess this was sort of Saunders breaking out again. He had a big game earlier in the season. He has a big game here. It's nice to see these weapons sort of develop. And while this season's probably – actually, I won't even say probably. This season's not going to end in a Grey Cup championship. At least they can find some of these young players that maybe can produce for this team in the future when they are challenging for Grey Cups.
I'm hoping so. That touchdown grab was beautiful by him too. He had to, you know, really – jump for that ball, bring it in, and then run to the end zone. So that was really impressive.
Yeah, and a nice block by Speedy B on that touchdown too. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to talk about the offense, and this is full credit to Saskatchewan's defense because their defensive front four is ferocious. But with Riker Matthews missing this game, I noticed that the line wasn't as good as it had been the previous 2 weeks, and we were seeing a lot more pressure off the right side where Lamar Holmes was filling in for Matthews. So I think this team, and we talked about it last week, with those five, Washington, the three Canadians in the middle, and Matthews on the right, I think I now, having seen with this those four with another fifth in there, I think I can safely say that the Matthews and those guys, that's the crew this team should be going with, because I felt like the offensive line wasn't as good in this game as it had been the previous two.
No, I didn't think so either, and it's kind of surprising that Matthews seems to be the better option, because he was not that first option. He was the other guy that they wanted to be a starter, and he got sick a couple of games ago. Matthews comes in, makes the best of his opportunity, and now he looks like he's the best option. So another thing I wanted to talk about was Mazzoli just looked flabbergasted against that three-man rush. He just could not find a man open. He seemed to have quite a bit of time, not on every play, but when they were sending three defensive lineman, he was very confused by that in the first half especially.
Oh, I hadn't picked up on that. Nice observation, Mike.
Yeah, it's just he it seemed like he was searching and couldn't. And it's understandable, I guess. I mean, when you drop nine players, there's going to be, you know, a lot of coverage. But other quarterbacks seem to, you know, take their time and eventually find an open man. And he had a lot of trouble with that, in my opinion.
Hmm. All right. Interesting. All right. Let's move on to the defense. I expected you to be really high on their performance. But from the sounds of our chat a little earlier, not as high on how well the defense played as I am.
Well, I thought they had a good game, and they kept this team in it for a lot of it. I think they had a good game, but I was just surprised at how well Brandon Bridge played. Maybe I underestimated him as a quarterback, and the numbers aren't great for him. 67% completion, which is actually pretty good compared to Mazzoli. Actually, you know what? His numbers are pretty good. 231 yards, 3 TDs. He just looked like a really good quarterback at times. And the defense was not stopping him. Bakari Grant had a huge game. 6 catches, 71 yards, a touchdown. Yeah, I mean, overall, the defense played pretty good, but they made Brandon Bridge look like a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I feel like the defense, they were put in some tough spots. The 5 turnovers by the offense gave short fields that the defense had to do something with, and they were able to get the stop, as I said, early in the game. I think they gave up another touchdown in the short field. So they gave up 10 points when it could have been 14, when they were put in positions where the offense was in a position to score right away. But you look at that second half, and they only allowed 3 first downs the entire second half, and it was on 1 drive. And outside of that, they completely shut down Saskatchewan's defense. And if it wasn't for this defense, this game would have been an absolute blowout. I don't know. I just look at that, and that impresses me. When you can get 6 straight 2-and-outs to end the game, you're putting your offense in position to win a football game. That and let's be honest, the Ticats had absolutely no business being in this game. 5 turnovers, an offense that couldn't find a rhythm. If you played them a Bruno Mars song, sir, they just had nothing there, and they were in this to the very end, and I think that goes 95% towards the defense.
Yeah, you're right, but I'll say this. I'll say first half defense, not so great. Second half defense, really, really, really good. I mean, they gave up 17 points in that second quarter, so maybe that clouded my judgment a bit. So it was a bit of a different story in the second half, though, I will say that.
Any players stand out for you, both good or bad?
Well, the you know what? I'm gonna call an audible on the Bozo, because I just remember this, but the DeMond was just, you know, you can't be doing that. That's unacceptable behavior on the field.
Yeah, it was weird in the stands, because you didn't know what happened. And then I heard that even at home, they never showed the spitting take place. And I'm not denying that it happened. I think it's pretty obvious when someone spits in someone's face, but what, like, he was having a bad game to begin with. That was he was getting torched by the Riders receivers, and then to do something like that, it's look, he's going to get fined for it. I saw people calling for suspensions, but something like that's not going to get you suspended. It's going to get him fined, probably the maximum. But yeah, that's pretty bozo-y.
Yeah, but on the plus side, I'll give a shout out to a couple linebackers, Larry Dean and Simone Lawrence had a pretty good game. From both of them, both had 2 quarterback sacks. Simone Lawrence had a forced fumble, 7 defensive tackles by Dean, 6 by Simone. So they really stepped up their game in this outing.
Yeah, they were awesome. There's one guy I'd like to shout out, Don Unamba. He made the big play at the near the end of the game. I think it was the second to last Rider series. Made an absolutely gorgeous play on the ball to knock it away from Naaman Roosevelt. And I actually thought that he played a really good game as the boundary corner for the Ticats. And the secondary, we've talked about it now. What are we, 11 games into the season? We've talked about it for 11 games worth. I feel like the secondary is finding some pieces there in the young guys. It seems to be the veterans like Courtney Steven and Emmanuel Davis that are actually a bit underperforming. Davis got beat on a few plays, including the Naaman Roosevelt touchdown that would have been essentially the winning points for the Riders. But I thought Unamba and Richard Leonard, we've talked about all year, have played really well. And the missed opportunities on defense. There was a few times there where they could have had interceptions and they didn't come down with them. When you turn the ball over as many times as they did, and then you don't get the turnovers the other way, that kind of tilts the game. Like, everyone, football scribes and players and all that, say there's, you know, five or six games in a given game, or five or six plays in a given game that kind of dictate the outcome. And the turnovers Ticats had and the lack of being able to get turnovers themselves, that those are those big plays. But I thought Unamba was a guy coming out of this game that I was really impressed with. I think he might have a future in the secondary.
Yeah, Unamba had a good game. The dropped interception that I remember the most was, I believe it was Emmanuel Davis. And that's the guy that usually comes up with those. I mean, he's been a ball hawk ever since he's been in Hamilton, and he just was not that this game.
No, not at all. If you're good to go, there's some special team stuff we got to talk about, because we actually got some decent performances on that side of the ball.
Yep, let's do it.
Damar Altman, man, he's got to be this team's punt returner going forward. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed they took him out.
I am so glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you, why would you go back to Banks at the end of the game when Altman nearly broke one for a touchdown?
Yeah, he looked good all game. And, you know, Banks had that – he dropped the ball in a return, but then he ended up getting, you know, a pretty good return out of it. But I was surprised that they would take him out and bring Banks in. I know why they did it, because maybe because of his pass and the big play ability there. But if I were the coach, I would have let Altman stay in there and do his thing, because he was having a really good game.
Yeah, he was catching a punt and finding the hole and going. And he had a long return of 37 on a punt, and it was one where if he makes one more guy miss, he's in the end zone. And he gets spun around, and it allows the Riders to tackle him. And it's a shame. I just thought, okay, this is the guy. Willie Quinn is a guy that they still have on the practice roster that we're going to have to get a look at some point, that apparently has speed to kill. But Altman, I thought, was really, really good. And then when I see Banks out there in the last, I think, two punts, I was like, I don't really get it, because he's been that key part of the offense. He hasn't been doing special teams as much. Yeah, he has the big playability, but Altman has that too. They should have just left him back there.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, taking him out and putting Banks in was the wrong call, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's like they overthought themselves, you know?
Yeah. Just leave the guy in. He's in a rhythm. He's been performing well all game. Just let him stay out there and do his thing.
Another guy that we got to let stay out there and do his thing is Sergio Castillo, man. This guy, perfect again, 4 for 4, long of 50, just has two misses on the season. This guy, we worried so much, and every time we talk about him, I say it, we worried so much about the kicking game in the preseason and in training camp and in the offseason, and this guy's been money. He's the out of kickers with 20 or more attempts, his accuracy rate is the best in the league.
Yeah, I think he has a serious shot if he keeps the way he's going at being a nomination for Special Teams Player of the Year. And I'm looking at his punting average right now, and it's this game it was 52.3, which is a really good average for a CFL punter. So he's getting it done in the punting game, the field goals. He's just been great.
It's now time to pick our glorious player of the week for this game, and I narrowed it down to two. We've talked about both of them, so I'm going to give an honorable mention to Jalen Saunders with his 10 catch, one touchdown, 138 yard performance. But I'm giving the player of the week to Simone Lawrence. This is the first real big Simone Lawrence game that I think he's had all year. You brought up the numbers, 6 tackles, 2 sacks. He had the big force fumble early in the game, the one turnover this team got that unfortunately they couldn't do anything with. But he was out there making plays. This is the best game I think he's had all season. We haven't talked about him enough this year because he hasn't given us a reason to talk about him. But this gave us a reason, and so for that, he is my player of the week.
I approve of this.
You are Mike Graham, and you approve this message?
Yes, exactly.
Beauty. All right, let's move on to some news. The Ticats did a lot this past week. So I guess we'll start off with the big trade that happened on Sunday. They acquired receiver Shamad Chambers from the Edmonton Eskimos for a 7th-round pick in 2018 and a fifth-round pick in 2019. Chambers, I think it's fair to say, has never really lived up to the hype after being selected sixth overall in the 2012 draft. In 70 career games, he has 141 catches for 1,543 yards and 8 touchdowns, but he was the Grey Cup's most valuable Canadian in 2015 when the Eskimos beat the Ottawa Redblacks. So after, what, 2.5 years, he's finally in Hamilton. So it took almost 3 seasons for my prediction that Chambers would play for the Ticats to come true.
Yeah, it did come true, and you were right. You were right. Finally, you were right.
I was playing the long game, Mike. I was playing the long game. I was like, exactly. Yeah, I'll say he'll be here. He's coming this offseason. But I just sat back and waited for it to happen.
It was a slow burn, baby. But honestly, I see him coming here and contributing nothing, just like he contributes nothing wherever he's been. There's been high expectations, obviously, and he's just invisible everywhere he goes. Yes, he had the most outstanding Canadian in the Grey Cup, but that was basically because there were no other candidates to choose from. I see him coming here and doing nothing.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, like I said, the hype has never been matched for a guy who went in the first round of the draft. I think he'll do a little more than nothing. At least maybe I'm looking at it on the optimistic side. He's coming. He's going to be playing close to home. He's, best buddies with Simone Lawrence. Maybe that will give him something. I don't know. I just feel like worst case scenario, he is better than the guys that they already had starting, and that's kind of a really large indictment on the Canadian receivers they had starting on the team. It's like Mike Jones, we know what has happened with him. Mitchell Baines was starting this last game, and he had his first 2 catches of his career, but that's not a guy who's in his first year that you can really rely on. I'm not expecting Chambers to come in here and light the world on fire, but I feel like with his speed and he is a veteran, I feel like you have to respect him a little bit more, but I'm not expecting a whole ton, to be perfectly honest.
No, and I'll back off a bit on the pessimistic Mike, but I agree that he's a definite upgrade from what we have right now, that's for sure.
Ticats made a few roster moves outside of the trade. They signed 3 players. They brought back running back Alex Green and defensive back Mario Cooper. Both of those guys were cut in camp. And then early Monday, they signed some scrub named Andy Fantuz. Have you even heard of this guy?
Can't say I have. Where I don't know. Where did he come from? Did he play in the arena or what?
Yeah. All jokes aside, everyone knows who Andy Fantuz is. He finally signed his player contract. So he signed a practice roster deal, which I'm assuming is just so he can he can actually practice with the team and sort of get the rust off. And it sounds like he's going to be back in the next week or two. He's not going to play this week against BC, but based on what I'm hearing and talking to some people, don't be surprised that that home game on September 30th against the Toronto Argonauts, don't be surprised if that's a game that number 83 has circled for his return to the black and gold.
Yeah, I just hope. I hope they're not rushing it because, the season's basically over now. But who knows? They'll get a win and we'll come back next week and I'll be like, oh, the best team in the world. Because that's just the way it is. We just, from week to week, the 2 wins in a row, and I thought maybe this team's going to turn around. But Fantuz is a guy, obviously, that was having a spectacular season before he got injured. Could have been the most outstanding Canadian. I just hope he is the same player that he was after this devastating injury. I know that, that's high expectations because that's a tough injury to come back from, but he's gonna give a lot to this team. I mean, he's that steady Eddie guy, the second and medium passing possession receiver. So he has a lot of experience, obviously, and he's going to bring that to this team. Hopefully he'll be back in the next couple weeks.
Brings size to this receiving core as well, right, which is something this unit lacks a lot of. I think Tasker might be the tallest guy in the receiving core, and I don't even think he touches 6 feet. So Fantuz is like 6'3", 6'4". That's a big dude to get back. That adds a different dimension. It's been about 11 months since he got hurt, which is, I'd say, around average for coming back from an injury such as that. So I don't think he's being rushed back. I think they took their time with him. And if they're going to rush him back, I think you would have seen it at, when they were 0-4, 0-5. We need you back. You got to get back. But I think they took their time. I think they did this the right way. I have no idea how long he signed for. My assumption is he signed until the remainder of the season, and then he'll be a free agent again. But I don't think he wants to play anywhere else, so I don't think there's any worry that Andy Fantuz is going to be suiting up for any other teams. But it'll be nice to see him back on the field. I hope his debut is a home game, because that'll be a nice ovation, especially the first time he catches a pass. I think the fans will go absolutely bonkers. So I hope it's that Saturday, September 30 game against the Argos that he comes back. But it's just nice to have him on the field. I know, you know, both of us are not like, Shamad Chambers is going to come here and be the greatest thing ever, but Fantuz and Chambers in that receiving core is an awful lot better than Mike Jones and Mitchell Baines.
Oh, yeah, by a country mile. I mean, yeah, I'm not that high on Chambers, but, you know, both those guys have experience, and Fantuz has been absolutely phenomenal his whole career. So overjoyed to see him almost making his return.
So when players come, that means players also have to go. And the Ticats released three players this past week. Linebacker DJ May and linebacker Akeem Wonder were brought in over the last couple weeks, never saw the field, and they were let go. But the big release was Brian Timms. And he also, not only was he released, but less than a day later, he signed with the Argos. He had 25 catches for 204 yards on the year. And if you go back and listen to us talking earlier this season, we were both super high on this guy, and he absolutely failed to live up to expectations.
Yeah, and I wonder how much that lays on him or how much that lays on the offense. That was just terrible for most of the season. I think he's going to go to Toronto, and, you know, he's got Ricky Ray throwing the ball if he gets into that starting lineup, which I don't know. I'm assuming he will, but I think he's going to show much improvement in that Toronto offense than he did with Hamilton this year.
You're not going to be one of those fans, though, that says he's going to come back and burn us, are you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think he's a good receiver and he'll have success in Toronto, but I don't see him, like, you know, torching us for 200 yards or something in the next game.
Yeah, so when this happened, I reached out to some people because I wanted to be thorough, because I didn't see much out of Timms this year, honestly. I saw a guy who was a bit of a malcontent. We saw him spouting off on Twitter. We've seen him get anger on the sidelines. So I talked to some people, and a couple things stood out. Apparently, he was not a guy who was very flexible in the positions he could play, which doesn't do you any favors in a Ken Austin system where he wants all his players to be able to do pretty much everything. So Timms was pretty rigid there. And the big one that I had either forgotten about or didn't know about was that he was not on an entry-level deal. So apparently when he came to the Ticats last year, he said, I will sign with you for the remainder of the season, but I want to be released after the year. And I think we saw that. We talked about that. We thought, oh, that's strange. And then he went and he still thought he could play in the NFL. That didn't happen. He re-signed here, and he did not sign here for league minimum. He was making, I'm not going to say he was making crazy money, but he was not making league minimum money. And that production for a player that is making more than league minimum, I look at this move, and as much as high as I was on him, and I still think he's got skills, and I think he will do well in Toronto, I'm not at all surprised that they made this move.
No, if you look at the season that he had and, you know, the things that you mentioned on Twitter and him being angry on the sidelines, it does add up. I wasn't expecting to see it, but when it did happen, I wasn't like, my jaw didn't hit the floor.
Okay, we have to talk about something that I am already sick of talking about. It. I've been sick of talking about every time we talk about it. We got to talk about Johnny Manziel again. This is because the news came out that he triggered his 10-day negotiation window with the Ticats. So it was hoped that this would all be solved as of today, but that's not the case because the league extended Hamilton's deadline to sign him indefinitely because they have to set up a bunch of parameters for him before they will allow a team to sign him to a contract. And apparently there's a ton of interest league-wide in Johnny Manziel, so the league's allowing the Ticats to explore trade possibilities as well. So apparently before Manziel will sign with a team, he has to meet with a domestic violence expert and with the commissioner. And I hope that within the next couple of weeks, this whole thing is done, because I am really tired of talking about all this.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I think about Johnny Manziel coming to Hamilton, and it's like, if he does really well, he's gone. if he does really bad, he's gone. So I don't see a long-term solution with bringing in Johnny Manziel. It's more of a short-term thing for him to get his career back on track, and either way, he's gone. So you bring him in, you know, you got to think that Claros is gone. Mazzoli's a free agent. We could have some serious trouble with the quarterback's position in the upcoming years because, you know, we're in a sticky situation right now.
You nailed it, man. I actually said this to some people at the game over the weekend because this news obviously came out just before the Ticats game, maybe a day or maybe the day of. I can't remember what it was. And I said the same thing. So here's the thing. Johnny Manziel comes up to the CFL and he dominates and he goes right back to the NFL in a year and a half. Or he comes up here and he stinks and he's gone after a year and a half anyway. Like there's no scenario I can think of where Johnny Manziel is a 10-year CFL veteran. There's no scenario that I see where he sticks around. So as I say this, I think the Ticats should trade his rights. Because no matter what happens, if they trade him and he plays great, they're not going to get burned on it because he's going to get another shot in the NFL. And if they trade him and he plays poorly, they're not going to get burned on it because then all they're going to do, people are going to look and go, I can't believe someone traded whatever it was for Johnny Manziel. So it's like they're kind of in a no-lose situation if they trade his rights.
I think they could get quite a bit for him too if you look at last year – Vernon Adams. Like, gets a first round pick. I mean, Johnny Manziel is especially to a team, say, that's struggling in attendance and all that stuff, people will show up to watch him. I guarantee it. There will be, you know, college fans, NFL fans that will show up just to watch Johnny Manziel play, no matter what. So if they wanted to trade him to Toronto, I could see that being a scenario, or Montreal, or whatever, because there seems to be a lot of interest. So pick the best offer and get what you can for him.
Okay, Mike, let's play a little what if game here. Where do you think Johnny Manziel ends up?
I'm going to say Montreal. If we trade his rights, I'm going to say Montreal.
I said the same thing. That's what when someone asked me because this is the question I was asked after the game on Friday, and I said Montreal. I'm going to say Montreal. I think it's a Jim Popp move, and I know Jim Popp's not there. But it still feels like a Montreal move because they got all those veterans, and I could see them bringing this big-name guy. I said Montreal as well, so we agree on that. God damn. What do you think they'll get in return for him, though?
Oh, you know, that's really hard because CFL trades are just very strange. But I could see maybe a second-rounder, maybe a Canadian player if a team really wants him.
Okay. I was thinking draft picks, personally. If Vernon Adams goes for a one, I feel like Johnny Manziel, nah, but he's not going to stick around. Vernon Adams at least is probably going to be up here for the remainder of his career.
Maybe, but it is similar, right? Because yeah. Vernon Adams, yes, at least he was in the league and you saw a little bit of him, but there wasn't like a big sample size that you could point to and be like, ah, this guy's going to be a really good quarterback. So, yeah, I could see maybe a first rounder, second rounder for him.
Yeah, okay, I think I can agree with that. So let's move on to the last bit of Ticats news, and it's just a quick one. Jeremiah Mazzoli was named Player of the Week for his performance against the Ottawa Redblacks, and this is really only significant because we got, I guess that would have been game 10, 10 games into the season, and he was the first Ticat to earn that honor. So congratulations to him, and hopefully the Ticats can win a few more games and have a few more Players of the Week, although I don't know how likely that is.
Yeah, it's going to be tough down the stretch, I'll tell you that, but... Yeah, good on Mazzoli. I think that it definitely wasn't his passing numbers that gave him that award. It was definitely a mixture between the pass and the run.
For sure, for sure. Okay, CFL news. Big stuff this past week. The league made some sweeping changes. We're going to have a 21-week season. That does not mean there will be extra games, folks. That just means that teams will play their 18 games over 21 weeks, which means each team now will have 3 bye weeks. And the league ended padded practices during the regular season, effective immediately. These are some big moves by the CFL.
They are very big moves. And I remember we were discussing at the start of the season that Ambrosi was saying that he didn't like the, you know, 3 games in 14 days or whatever it was for the Red Blacks. And we were discussing, well, how are they going to do that? I don't see how they could do that. But they came up with a solution. I guess it's a good thing because there won't be those crazy amount of games in a small amount of days. but I'm not crazy about the three bye week. But whatever they have to do to make it better for the players and the player safety, I'm all for.
The three bye weeks don't bother me because it's not like they went to a 27-week schedule where every team gets three bye weeks. Like, you know how they play 18 games in a 20-week season. We're gonna get bye weeks where three teams, I think, are going to be off. So we're going to get three-game weeks. And I just don't feel like we're going to miss – I don't think we're going to notice the bye weeks, I think, as much as people think. And we get one extra week of football. And it may be a week without our favorite team, but it's one less week without football during the year. And that to me, is a positive.
Yeah, that's I would have to agree with that. And the padded practice thing is, I think the league is just trying to be progressive, trying to be the first one to do it. And I don't have a really big problem with it. Now, I've never played organized football, so I don't really have expert opinion on this. But if it's going to prevent injuries and all that stuff, I'm all for it.
I played high school football, and we had padded practices. But when you're 17, 18 years old, you're Superman, and your body, right. You're not 30. And at 30, like I can attest, at 35, my body feels a lot differently when I wake up in the morning than it did when I was 17. So if it's going to extend careers and the league thinks it's a good thing, and they made these changes in conjunction with the PA, so the league and the Players Association are having what looks like a rather harmonious relationship right now, that could bode well going down the line. Like, look what they gave the players. They gave the players an extra week off during the season. They said you don't have to wear pads during practice during the season. They're giving the players something. This could be something that Ambrosi goes when the CBA comes up and says, hey, this is what we gave to you. This is what we'd like in return. Like, it could lead to a much more or much less acrimonious negotiation. Like the last time they went into training camp without a deal. So I think this could bode well for the future relationship between these two entities.
Yeah, and that's one of the big selling points of Randy Ambrosi, is that he used to be a player, right? So he gets this stuff. And the stronger the relationship between the PA and the CFL, the better. Because we all know in the four major sports leagues that there's strikes way more than there should be, or lockouts. And I just don't want to see that in the CFL.
Not at all. What's not in lockstep, or what's not in sync, if you will, is the Montreal Alouettes and reality. Essentially, they are giving the Ticats a run for their money this year when it comes to making crazy, I don't want to say boneheaded decisions, because that's not this, but just like they're trying to wrest the title of most dysfunctional franchise from our team here in Hamilton. They fired head coach Jacques Chapdelaine and defensive coordinator Noel Thorpe. Kavis Reed has taken over as interim head coach. Dan Quick has become the pseudo-defensive coordinator, and they essentially gave the offensive coordinator duties back to Anthony Calvillo, which, if you remember the last time he was offensive coordinator, it was not pretty. We saw the fruits of that labor in their game against Ottawa this past Sunday, when the Owls just looked absolutely atrocious. The Ticats are still probably the biggest laughingstock in the league right now from some of the things they've tried to do, but this is not a good look for the Alouettes. They are... Ever since Calvillo retired and Trestman left, this team has just been not good.
No, they've really taken a nosedive. They were like the model franchise for years and years in the CFL, you know, very competitive year after year, even dominant in the East Division. And it has not been that way the last couple of years. And the ownership is just too trigger happy with this stuff. I mean, it seems like every year they fire a head coach halfway through the season, and that's just not going to get your franchise ahead. They put in – and the Chapdelaine doesn't necessarily shock me. Noel Thorpe does. I mean, this guy has been one of the best defensive coordinators in this league for years and years and years, and to get rid of him, I think it was a big mistake.
So here's my thinking on why they let go of Thorpe, is that they were not going to make him head coach. And if he was going to get passed up for the head coaching job again, he was as good as gone at the end of the season anyway. So unless they were going to name him interim head coach and give him these last few games to sort of show that he can be the head coach for this team, then you might as well just get rid of him, because you're going to lose him anyway. But yeah, you're right. I found out in listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast, another Canadian Football Podcast Network family member. And they made mention that the Alouettes are the first team in CFL history to fire a head coach midseason in three consecutive years. They did it when they fired Tom Higgins and replaced him with Jim Popp. They did it again last year when they got rid of Jim Popp and replaced him with Jacques Chaptelain. And they've done it again this year, getting rid of Chaptelain and naming Cavis Reed the head coach. And now it makes me wonder, looking back, all those times that Jim Popp became the head coach of the Alouettes, it seems like giving the GM the head coaching job is something the Alouettes do, and it's not necessarily a Jim Popp thing.
Right, yeah, it's a Wetnaw thing, right? I don't understand why they won't give Noel Thorpe a chance. Like, give him the head coaching reins for the rest of the season and see what he can do. I mean, this guy's been rumored to be a head coach in the CFL for many years now. I don't understand why they're so afraid to give him that opportunity.
I don't really get it either. The only thing I can think of is maybe they look at him and they see him like a Greg Marshall, who for years was like, why is no one giving Greg Marshall a shot to be a head coach? And Greg Marshall, the defensive coordinator, not Greg Marshall, the ex-Ticats head coach and Mac right. head coach and Western head coach, the other Greg, the mustache Greg Marshall, that ended up being a head coach for like 8 minutes in Saskatchewan 1 year. And everyone was like, how has he not been a head coach? How is not? Maybe the same thing as Noel Thorpe. Maybe he just isn't meant to be a head coach. Rich Stubler, great defensive coordinator, never meant to be a head coach. Maybe that's just what Noel Thorpe is. Another perfect example.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe. But he hasn't been given that shot, right? I mean, he just – maybe he is just a great defensive coordinator. But you figure down the line he would at least be given a chance to show that he's not that.
Yeah, for sure. And now we have what looks like two head coaching openings going into the offseason. The Ticats could – move on from June Jones, and the Alouettes are obviously going to be looking for a head coach, so it's going to give us some stuff to talk about in December.
Yeah, and also the quarterback situation. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with quarterbacks this year in the CFL. So I think every offseason seems to get more and more exciting, and this one might be the most exciting.
It might be indeed. All right, let's preview this upcoming game, Mike. This one to me is interesting. Because when you look at this on paper, the BC Lions, who the Ticats play this upcoming Friday in Vancouver, should crush the Ticats. But now there are a lot of questions about who will start at quarterback for the Lions. Lule, we obviously know, is done for the year. And John Jennings got hurt in BC's loss to the Stamps. And I haven't heard anything. Have you heard anything about whether he's going to start or not?
Nothing.
So as talented as that roster in BC is, if they're starting someone like Mitchell Gale or Alex Ross, who are the other two quarterbacks that were on the depth chart this past week, I think they're in trouble. And this game that, to me, at the beginning of the year, looked completely unwinnable, suddenly doesn't.
But we're playing in BC. I mean, when was the last time we won in BC? I can't remember.
2011, I think.
Okay, so it's not quite as long as the Calgary streak, but it's been, 5 or 6 seasons. So, I mean, last week I said if Brandon Bridge is starting at quarterback, the Ticats will win this game. I was wrong about that. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, they have a shot because even with Jonathan Jennings, even with him in, the offense hasn't looked spectacular and they have so many weapons. So maybe we do have a shot. Who knows? But it's gonna be tough, I think.
No, it is going to be tough, and the late start time, this game doesn't kick off until 11 p.m. Hamilton time, and people can talk about these guys are athletes and the time shouldn't matter. That absolutely matters. You see teams, when they got to go from west to east and have an early kickoff, they don't play very well, and you see teams that have to go east to west for a late kickoff, and they don't play very well either. So this by no means is going to be an easy game for the Ticats. But it's one that if Lule or Jennings were in this game, especially if it was Lule, I wouldn't give the Cats a chance at all to win this game. But without him, I don't know, maybe they could do something in this one.
Yeah, it's a definite possibility if they can slow down the running game and make them pass the ball with an inexperienced quarterback. Maybe we can take advantage with some turnovers.
Yeah, I'm looking at the offense in this one, and there's two things that I think they got to do. Pound the rock and give Mazzoli time. Since Jones took over, the Cats have rushed the ball 10, 18, and 16 times in each of those three games. So if you're getting 15 or so carries in a game, 50 or so rushing attempts, I think the Cats have a good shot to win. And I hope Riker Matthews is back. I have no idea if he will be because, like we talked about earlier, I did not like the line play with him out there. But if they can give Mazzoli time and he can make some plays with his feet or actually get a chance to make some reads and throw deep, I don't know. I'm not going to say they're absolutely going to win this game, but I'm a lot more bullish on their opportunity now with what has transpired going into this game.
And I think they should try and establish the run with Mazzoli early on, because that's when he's at his best, right? When there's that threat of him running the ball. And that's when I thought that the offense really took off, when he started running the ball last week. So let's maybe put in some running plays for him and see if they can get off to a quick start.
I like it. I like it. Anything specifically defensively you'd like to highlight, or you just want them to play like they did in the second half against the Riders?
Well, I like to see the linebackers play like they did in that game against the Riders, because Dean and Lawrence were just killing it out there. So if they can duplicate that performance and, you know, get some pressure on whoever's going to be the quarterback, we might have a shot at this.
Yeah, and apparently the defense could be getting a big shot in the arm. Michael Atkinson was at practice today for the first time since July. So not only has he been a very, very good player for this defensive lineman who's been in there, he's also he's a Canadian. That's going to help with the ratio. So maybe the Ticats will get healthy and can piece together a few wins here and get themselves back into the playoff picture.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not far off. Well, I guess I'm not even sure. I haven't even looked at these division. I know that Toronto's in first place or tied for first place with Ottawa, but it's gonna be a tough hoe. But you never know.
No, you never do know. So let's move on. Let's get our picks in here, Mike. Let's do what we do every week. I will make one thing known. Last week on the show, I did pick Montreal to win, but then after we did the show and they fired everyone on three down where I do my picks, I changed it to the Red Blacks. I noted it on Twitter. I said, when I posted the show, I said, you're going to listen to this, but because of what happened there, don't listen to my pick on the game. I'm going with the Red Blacks. I just want to make that known. I didn't flip flop or anything. We didn't know that information when we made these picks. So it was tough to stick with that, because I just didn't think there was any way that Montreal would fire their entire coaching staff on like a Wednesday and be ready to play a game on Sunday. So yeah, I hope that never happens again, but it did happen, and I just want to make everyone aware of it.
Good for you. I remember I did that last year and I got roasted, but anyway.
It's okay. Anyway, let's start off. Friday night, doubleheader starts in Winnipeg. The Red Blacks travel to take on the well-rested Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mike, who do you like?
The Red Blacks are hurting at the quarterback position, and I think the Bombers are just overall a better team. I got to go with Winnipeg.
Yep, you nailed it. Drew Tate's even hurt now for Ottawa. The Bombers are coming off a bye. They're at home. They're just a better football club right now. Winnipeg, to me, in a walk. The second half of that doubleheader is our Ticats going to BC, taking on the Lions. Mike, who do you got?
I'd like to pick the Ticats, but I just can't. I got to go with the Lions.
So I'm going to pick Hamilton with an asterisk here. It all depends on what happens at the quarterback position with the BC Lions. So the reason I prefaced all this by talking about switching my pick last week, I'm taking the Ticats based on what I know right now. But if Jonathan Jennings does indeed play, I will switch my pick to the BC Lions, just so everyone's aware of that right now. Saturday, we have one game, Eastern Division Showdown. Those horrid Alouettes travel to Toronto to take on the Argonauts. Mike, who do you got in this one?
Man, the Argos are a hard team to figure out. They looked really good last game, but the game before they didn't, and it just seems one good game, one bad game. But the Alouettes are just in shambles right now. Durant looks terrible, and he will be the starting quarterback, so I got to go with the Argonauts.
Yeah, the Owls are a mess. I'm taking the Argos. Sunday, last game of the week, Calgary at Saskatchewan. Mike, are you going upset?
No, I can't. Calgary's just the model franchise in this league. They're the best team by far right now. So, yeah, Stampeders.
I got the Stamps too, of course. They're head and shoulders above everyone else right now. But, man, it will be tough putting up with Riders fans if they can find a way to pull this one out, won't it?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the last segment. We got some questions to talk about here, and we're going to just go right into it. Adam sends us another couple of questions this week. His first one: what players recently released by NFL or CFL teams would you like to see the Ticats sign? Adam mentioned Brian Hall, former Ticat, returning to pair with Devon Coleman if the Cats are going to continue going with two American defensive tackles. So, Mike, anyone out there that was released by a CFL or NFL team you'd like to see come to the Ticats?
I don't mind that Brian Hall idea. That's an interesting, it's an interesting one. Because he had success here, so why not bring him back? But I would have loved to see Darrell Walker. I know that it wouldn't happen because if he's not in the NFL, he's going to sign with the Eskimos. But I would love to see him in a Tiger Cats uniform, on the field, you know, making plays for the Tigers.
Yeah. So initially, my answer to this was going to be Otha Foster, because he was released by, I want to say, the Ravens. But then he went and signed with the Riders, so I was like, okay, what about Aaron Grimes? There's a guy who was a killer for the Eskimos the year they won the Grey Cup. He went to, I believe, the Philadelphia Eagles, but I think he's since been released. He'd be a great addition to the secondary.
I didn't know he was released.
Huh. I'm fairly – maybe he's on the I'm 99% sure that he was released after training camp by the Eagles.
Well, yeah, if that's true, then he was a hell of a player with the Eskimos and – he'd be a great addition to that secondary, that's for sure. Yeah, I'd love to see him in black and gold, too.
Adam's second question is a pretty simple one. Should Philip Lawley get more credit for the defense turning it around?
I think he should get some credit, yeah. I mean, you don't really hear anyone talking about him coming in and really taking control of this defense and, you know, settling them down, making it simpler. And they've been better. There's no doubt about it. They have been much better since he's taken over.
They haven't allowed 30 points in a game since before Labor Day, and they were allowing 30-plus routinely. There was talk – I think Adam even sent us a question asking us if we thought the Ticats defense would surrender the most points in a season in league history, and they're not going to come anywhere close to that, I don't think. They have really – since Labor Day, since that bye week when they were probably allowed to implement more of what they do, both Lawley and Jones offensively – I think this team has been a lot better defensively. Absolutely. I think he should get a ton of credit, and I think he should be in the mix next year for the defensive coordinator position.
Yeah, I'd like to see him come back. I mean, the defense has been just so much better compared to what it was when Reinbold was in charge. And maybe that's partially because we're getting some players back, but I don't know. I think he deserves a lot of the credit for sure.
Last question comes from Broccoli, who sent us a question last week and whose name I absolutely adore and will continue to adore because I think it's awesome. He asks, what will the Ticats secondary look like when fully healthy? Kanae and Davis at halfback, Leonard at cornerback. But will Steven move to the other corner and Daly start at safety with Lank as his backup? Or will it be something else? So, Mike, everyone that the Ticats have on their roster at defensive back is healthy. Who's your starting five?
Well, I think I'm going to put Courtney Steven back to the corner spot and put Daly at safety, like he mentioned, because I just think that's where he thrived the most. Courtney Steven was at corner. And whenever Mike Daly's been in the game, he's done good things in the past year. So I'd like to see him be a full-time starter at safety, especially since Butler has retired. And he could be that new Butler. I mean, he's a similar player to him, in my opinion. So I'd like to have those two guys, Stevens at corner, Daly at safety, Davis, Leonard, and Uwamba has been playing great too. So I'd love to see those guys starting for this team in that grouping.
So as much as I would love to see two Canadians start in the secondary, I have to keep Steven at safety. I know he hasn't played as well there as he did at corner, but I feel like he's going to be this team's starting safety for the foreseeable future, and I think you got to live with that. He played safety in college, he played it in university, so he's used to it. And to me, the halfbacks are Abdul Kanae and Emmanuel Davis. If both those guys were healthy, they'd be there, no questions asked. And then at corner, I think we found a couple of young guys. I don't think I can take Unamba off the field, and Richard Leonard has been the best DB this team has. So my preferred starting five would be Kanae and Davis at the halfback spots, Leonard and Unamba at corner, and Steven at safety. And then you got guys like Daly and Langa as their backups. As much as I would love to see Daly start, because I am a huge, huge Mike Daly fan, I just feel like this fivesome here would give the Ticats the best chance to be successful on the back end.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, but with the Daly and Steven starting, that's two Canadians that would go well towards the ratio, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because then you have those two, then you got the three offensive linemen. Now you're at five. Then you throw in Fantuz, that's six. there's a lot of room for flexibility there. You got Ted Laurent, who's still there. You got Michael Atkinson, like Justin Capocotti. Like, now this team would be in a position, and that's why I could see them not moving Steven, simply because they could start 9 Canadians if everyone was healthy, but they don't have to, and it allows for a lot more flexibility with the roster and getting Americans, like, say, in the receiving core and stuff like that. So I feel like they would stick with one, but, man, yeah, having 2 Canadians start in the secondary would be great for the ratio.
We haven't seen Abdul Kane in so long. I don't even know when he'd come back. So is he signed for 2 years, or, you know, he must? I don't know.
No, he did. He signed a 2-year deal when he signed in the offseason.
Yeah. So I'm hoping we can see him back and, you know, get some samples of what he still is, or if he still is that great player, before going into next season, so we can evaluate him a bit, because I'm not sure how he played. You know, I think he was only in one game.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I think he only played a half. I think he only played a half. Yeah.
So I'd like to see him back on the field so they could at least take a look at what he's got.
Yeah, and see if he's worth keeping around for next year, because they have found some young DBs, and like Richard Leonard, to me, he's
a keeper.
He's absolutely a keeper. He has been phenomenal. So you find these young guys, some of these vets, especially the guys that get hurt, can find themselves on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm. And you know that there would be a big pay cut, or, you know, the Canadians are going to be making way more than whatever the rookies are. So I could see them dumping him, really. If the rookies can step up and be starters, then why not, right?
Yeah, a lot's going to depend on who's calling the shots on defense, who's calling the shots from upstairs, who's calling the shots the head coach. It's going to be an interesting offseason, but it's not the offseason yet. We still have plenty of games to go. There's still football to watch, so let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, true, true.
All right, but ahead of ourselves we will not get when it comes to ending the show, because we're done. So you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. And if you want to throw us a question, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, let them know where they can find you there, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82, or you can post those questions in the comment section on 3downnation.com. So that was episode 88, the Dave Stalla episode of Podski Wee Wee. I have been Josh Smith.
And I have been Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.